Good morning, everyone. We'll go ahead and get started. Hi, I'm Joni, and I am a TED Talks-aholic. And that's going to be part of the initial part of our story. But first, I'd like us to introduce ourselves so that you sort of know what our backgrounds are and how we're connected and why we're here today. I'm Joni Dunlap, and I'm from the University of Colorado Denver, which is right up the street from where we are today. And I've been teaching online for a long time. Let's not talk about it. It's been too long to talk about. And this is my colleague.
Hi, I'm Patrick Longfall. Is this picking up pretty good?
Hi, all right, so let's try that again. I'm Patrick Longfall. I'm an instructional designer at Boise State. I met Joni. I lived in Denver for about 15 years, so Denver is a special place, but we're excited to be here.
And I'm not kidding about being a TED Talks aholic. How many other people are sort of obsessed by TED? I only see it. No, you got to be proud about it, please. You've got to live it. And those talks have been really influential to me, not just the content, but sort of the whole idea of presentation design and platform skills and so on. And so I do spend a lot of time, since I teach those types of courses, I spend a lot of time paying attention to TED Talks. And at one point a few years ago, I was exposed to this gentleman, who is a well-known designer. His name is Stefan Sagmeister. And he's done a couple of talks for TED. And one of them, which was one that really resonated for me, whereas he talked about his 20 lessons learned in life. And I want to share a couple of them with you. Trying to look good limits my life. Thinking life will be better in the future is stupid. I have to live now. And then worrying solves nothing. And this sort of took off for a little while as sort of a global sort of enthusiasm where people were creating their 20 lessons learned about life. And it got me thinking to do that with my students. And I started doing lessons learned from the course that we were just completing and was playing with that idea at the same time as working with some cherished colleagues, Patrick being one of them, and three others, who we were sharing sort of our lessons learned about our teaching online, and probably collectively, we have quite a few years under our belts about teaching online. And what was interesting about that sharing was the commonalities in the sharing, as well as the nuances. And so we sort of decided that we wanted to not just hear from the five of us, but we wanted to start communicating with colleagues everywhere we went to find out what their best practices were. What were their key lessons learned about teaching online? And so we started to create a list, ourselves and with others.
And so we started doing this. What was the first conference? Was it Cold? Boulder? But we started, we each came up with two lessons, two things that when we sit there and we think about, you know, what is your key takeaway with teaching online, you know, online? And we broke them down, and so we're going to share two of ours, not our colleagues, but then we're going to get together, and this is an interactive session, I think it's listed, so be prepared. So one of my lessons learned that when I think about it, and obviously depending on where and when in my life you ask me, it'd probably be different. But the last couple of years, feedback has been essential. And giving feedback to students, and not just like, you know, good job, you did, you know, but really deep and meaningful feedback. Because one of the areas that we research and we're really interested in is this concept of presence. And, you know, we all know that, you know, learning online can be isolating, lonely. Students report this consistently, you know. And so we started finding that feedback, deep, meaningful feedback, not only is helpful for students when it comes to learning the material, but it also helps building that presence. It helps building those connections. And one of the things that, you know, we started playing with and I started playing with a while ago are what are multiple ways of giving meaningful feedback? And so one of the things I started probably, you know, 5 years ago was really using Jing and giving audio video feedback. Part of it is I teach a lot of courses on stuff like web design. And to give feedback, you don't have track changes and comments the same way you would, say, with a Word document. And so I started using Jing to give feedback, and the responses that I got back from students, they were amazed. They would constantly, because we start with, when you teach, you try to say something positive, do the sandwich kind of method, and then get into, you know, what was problematic. But students often just walk away with, he didn't or she didn't like this, this, and this. One of the things students would talk about was they could hear my voice, that I really did like these elements of it, and that they walked away with this, and they would ask, gosh, can I keep this video for later? But I also found that even if I am using something like Google Docs or Word, is that when I give feedback, to give very detailed feedback, and not just something at the end of saying, oh, you need to, you know, follow APA citation next time, but actually going through and giving them examples and walking them through. So that's one of my lessons learned, is feedback is key. It's one of the things that when I think about MOOCs or I think about these different things out there, I think that's where they're going to have issues, in my experience. Another lesson learned for me is that we like to, in the online learning world for a long time, this, oh, you got to be a guide on the side. And I think that can be taken way too far, because what happens is students often will perceive you as being absent, not being present, because for a number of reasons, but it's, you know, strategies that I started to take are to, you know, outline my teaching philosophy. Help students get to know me, who I am as an instructor. Now, this doesn't mean that it has to be teacher-centered, right? But they have to understand me as the teacher and the value I bring to this. Explain your role in group discussions. Because oftentimes, there are times where, you know, Joni will talk about she'll wait till a certain part in the week before she engages. Or we all have our own little ways, but students don't always understand that a lot of times it's intentional why and how we do things. So be very explicit with this. Establish how long it's going to take you to respond to questions. Identify how often and when you're online. For me, I often get online with my courses when my kids go to sleep. So, you know, from 10 to midnight, most days, they're going to find me online. They're not going to find me online at 8 in the morning. So this is something that the more explicit I can be about this, the better. And then provide students with multiple means of communication. So Joni, I've experimented with using social media, using all different types of things. But it's basically, sometimes just a phone call can be an amazing way to connect. But so often, it almost seems like, well, that's against the rules.
And again, just for some more context, I'm going to share a couple of mine. And the first one is that high touch is more important than high tech. And this sort of taps into what Patrick was just saying about the phone call. Can you guess that I sort of have a thing about 1950s science fiction stuff? Okay. Using the telephone, for example. But I'll share a quick thing. My institution, University of Colorado Denver, is adopting a new learning management system, which is Canvas. And one of the features of it is notifications that I hadn't had access to before. And the students are so far reporting how even something like that, these high levels of notifications, can help them feel like they're more in touch. And that's relatively low tech. It's not video, it's not audio. It's just, boy, I know that things are happening that's making me feel more connected. And so for me, that's been a huge sort of finding. But even still, I was on the phone most of yesterday with students. I'm teaching two online courses right now, connecting with them, making sure that they were comfortable in the course, comfortable with the first project, and so on. And those phone conversations, even though I also offer Google Plus Hangouts and Skype and other more high-tech tools for us to connect, many of them still want to pick up the telephone and talk to me that way. And that's been really an important finding for me. The second one is to not underestimate the power of fun, play, and the unexpected. And these are my daughters. They're my children, but a long time ago. They don't look like that anymore. At some point, one of them is going to say, stop showing that picture to people.
You can bet.
But I think that one of the important things that I found about online teaching is that so often students, when they're in a program that's fully online, which my students are, that the courses can feel somewhat the same. Everything sort of paced the same, sequenced the same. There's never a surprise. And so I try to create surprises as often as possible, and I try to make projects that address the learning objectives of the course, but do it maybe in a more playful way. And part of this is my really, I love John Medina and his Brain Rules book, and that book's been out for a while. But I use it as a textbook in one of my courses, in fact. I love it that much. But the people don't pay attention to boring things. So I look for ways to mix it up as much as possible. And so this is an example of my use of VoiceThread. Instead of, throughout the semester, I will look for multiple opportunities for us to reconnect it on a personal level. So I know usually in the first week of an online course, we spend time introducing ourselves with a bio activity, but I try to do it every few weeks so that we're reconnecting. And this is one of those examples where the students share what their superhero moniker is and what their superhero powers are. And they get very creative about it. And so it's a way of hearing them and seeing them, because VoiceThread allows video posting as well. And for them, it's sometimes they put on costumes, and it's actually an exciting way to connect. Another example is for them to do what I call a virtual paper bag. And has anyone ever done a paper bag activity as a getting to know you activity, where you've walked into a meeting with five items in a paper bag and shared them? Sort of a common breaking the ice, getting to know you activity. But I do this virtually, having people share their photos. So five photos that represent important aspects of their life. And then we have a whole discussion around that. For me, I do a lot of teaching of visual design and instructional design. And so those skills of learning to use these tools to share a message visually is also addressing my learning objectives. And then finally, this example is the Stefan Sagmeister example that I was sharing at the beginning. This was the first sort of thing I stole from him, which is that at the end of a course, I asked the students to share visually, with one visual image, their lesson learned from the course. And a couple of examples from the students are, I love this sort of drawing on the wall, unplug, because that was our constant message, don't design in front of a screen, design offline. Another one was to avoid clutter. This is someone's desk, and you'll see the Brain Rules book there because it was a textbook in the class. And then I love this one where all of these different characters in instructional design, you have to know your audience in order to really design engaging, relevant learning opportunities for people. So now, we want you to share the same experience we've been doing with large groups of people so that you're actually contributing to our data set before we share our existing data set with you. So it's your turn. I know that this room has a lot of technology. You got to be proud of that as well. If not, if you're sitting and you don't have technology on you, please gather around people who do. And Patrick, do you want to sort of jump in? This is our URL. We want you to go to this page. This is a Google Doc page. And I want you to spend the next few minutes thinking about your sort of lessons learned. What's the big thing that you've learned about online teaching that you would like to contribute, and add it to this list?
And if you don't have a computer, definitely find someone around you. You can come up here. You can tell me. For those online, we would love for you to get on here as well. So the tiny URL is basically going to bring you to a Google Doc. And the Google Doc, we can sit here and watch people. But the idea is, you know, what's your one, you know, or two lessons learned? Yeah.
It's actually at the top of that.
It is. Can you see it up there at the top? Is that too small?
Too small.
All right. Better? So we're going to spend about 10 minutes. So this isn't something that, you know, you have to race to do. We're going to give time. I'm going to have the list up there so you'll start to see there's people online, so they're also going to be contributing. And so if you've been teaching online, what is that one takeaway, right, that is so important for you? That's what we want to hear, because then we're going to share, after the list that we've done from doing this at three other conferences, the themes that have emerged from doing this. So are we ready to switch back to the Google Doc? And you don't have to be quiet. You can talk. You can get in groups. But the idea is this, you know, we're basically crowdsourcing this best practices.
There should be noise.
There should be lots of noise, right? And the idea is, don't, you know, hopefully you're not going to list 10 things. Try to think of what is that one, maybe two things. Because that's what's hard when you sit there and really think about teaching online, is there's so many things we hear that you should do, and sometimes it can be completely overwhelming. And sometimes the most important thing is picking up that phone call at the beginning of the course or whatever it might be. Sir, there was a question or a comment? So I'm going to scroll down so we can start watching this. I'm seeing that. And I don't know if someone jumped from 15 to 55 or... So like 75, it's important to teach faculty how to teach online. You know, this idea of good teaching is good teaching, but yet there are some very important differences. Create social presence using multiple techniques. Be interesting, that's a great one. Our colleague Brian Yonke, one of his lessons was, if it's boring to you, it's boring to your students. See, and that's that we've never done this online also simultaneously. So the three times we've done this, this is the most that we've kind of tested this.
This is a lesson learned.
Well, it is a lesson learned, but also one of the things that we really took away when we first did this was it's fun. Like so often in sessions, and we've done many of them, right? We sit here and we talk. You guys listen, and maybe we give a minute or two at the end for feedback, where the expertise that we encounter at conferences like this, using a Google Doc is a great way to get people creating stuff on the spot together.
You also have 28 people online that are probably participating.
Oh, that's great.
I love Tanya's giving her reference, right? Attribution. Adults want choice. Kids want choice too, but so wear a funny hat. That's nice. So we're going to give probably another 5 minutes. We really want to see this kind of take shape, and then we're going to go through and talk to you about some of the themes that we've seen emerge from doing this activity a few times already. Everyone likes funny cat pictures. I mean, that's a great one.
No, they don't. Not everybody likes. No, I'm sorry. What I was saying, not in front of a mic, was if you've gone through and entered what you wanted to on the list, go ahead and start looking at it. Because when we start to talk about themes, I'm going to ask you to be thinking about what is on this list in relation to our themes. So go ahead and sort of start looking at them. Nobody likes cat pictures.
Are you kidding me? Yes.
Just FYI, there's a 50-person limit. There's a 50-person limit to any Google Docs. This is why I crashed the MOOC yesterday.
Nice. So for those online, I think you heard the 50-person limit. And what's interesting, because when we've done this before, we've never had this many individual devices. Usually it's, you know, there's one laptop per four or five faculty. And in this case, you guys probably have two or three devices on you. So we didn't expect this many people, but we were told the blended learning session got canceled or something. So some of you, I think, are spillover from there. So it's the blended learning people's fault, not ours.
Yeah, Google's fault. You're right. Yeah. There. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, one last moment. Finish whatever final. One last moment. I'm watching Mark, who's directing me when I'm too far from the mic. One last moment. Finish any final thoughts you have. Go ahead and scan this list. Folks online as well, finish up your final thoughts. And so, as we've mentioned, we've been collecting this data from colleagues pretty much every time we go somewhere. And this is an example of me doing that. So we wanted to sort of share with you, Patrick and I sort of coded our data separately and then compared our themes. And we'd like to share those with you and then have you do some work on it as well. The first theme that came up was student support. And again, be thinking about what's in the list that we just created together today. And some of the comments from people were things like addressing all learning styles, having effective rubrics, model what you want from students. And one of Patrick's points was making things very concrete and explicit in terms of instructions. So can you think of examples that are in our list, or did anyone enter something that they think is sort of falls into this category? Yes, way in the back.
He's going to come over with the mic.
Hi, I'm Tanya.
Hi, Tanya.
I have managed student expectations. I think in our faculty development program and teaching online, it fits into this when you talk about having rubrics, model what you want students to know. Students aren't only possibly new to the technology and the LMS, but they're also possibly new to learner-centered learning, the pedagogy. And so when you're asking them to do things every few days and so forth, and what your role is going to be in the discussions, if you're going to be present or not, it all comes down to managing student expectations, and that's what's going to lead to student satisfaction with the online course. Something I was supposed to answer specifically, or
no. I think that
perfect.
Was great. Yeah.
No, perfect. Just nice to have an example from this session that we'd add to the list. I completely agree, and that one of our recommendations. I do a lot of work with faculty as well, and one of the recommendations is think about what your strategies for success are, and make that share that. And share that in advance if you can. I've been talking to a group of faculty who are preparing for a new format, teach in a new format, which is a three-week format on our campus, and how quickly can you get that information to people in advance? This is the same online for people who are new to online. Even, again, even if they've been in an online experience before, an online learning experience before, they haven't been in your online learning experience before necessarily, and there's differences. And so anything you can do to support them for them to be successful, the less heartache for them, the less heartache for you as well.
The thing I'll add to is addressing all learning styles, that's a thorny, learning styles is one of those thorny concepts these days. You can often just think of it as giving students choice and putting things in multiple formats. So it doesn't have to get in the rhetoric of learning styles, but this idea that students like choice, and sometimes one student's going to want to watch the video, the other would rather. I use video announcements a lot, and while probably two-thirds love it, I always have a couple students who say, just type it out already. And so there is this idea of just multiple formats.
The second theme that came up for us is this idea of structure and presentation of the content of the learning activities and so on. And so some of the examples from the data we've collected are put information into digestible chunks, use guest lectures when appropriate, assign meaningful work, and use technology intentionally. Anybody in this session who had sort of a suggestion, a lesson learned that falls into this category that they'd like to share in the room or online over here?
We're going to start with her behind you, and then we'll come to you.
Jean Marie, I teach at Otis College of Art and Design, and my comment for structure and presentation was really know your outcomes and design for your outcomes.
Yeah, great one. There's another one up here in the green.
Oh, I was taking the picture.
There was actually one behind you. She's also.
Hi, I'm Diane. With the putting information in digestible chunks, we really had to work with our professors who, when lecture capture kind of got implemented at our school, there was that thought, the big joke was one good year. you could lecture capture all your best lectures and then just throw that online. And really trying to work with them to help them understand that students were not going to, in an online situation, were not going to sit still for 50 minutes and watch their incredible lectures. That was a lesson they had to learn, and they got it really quickly, thankfully, but being able to chunk those, even those great lectures, up into smaller pieces that were sort of had other context around them was a lesson we really had to learn.
No question. I mean, I remember when Jean first came out, I hated the five-minute limit. There's one over there. I hated that five-minute limit. But as I started using it more and more, it became one of the best things because it forced me to keep things to 5 minutes. And so that chunking things is huge. Yes, sir.
About putting information in digestible chunks, my students really want me to hand them pre-digested content, ideally in bullet points. But if you're teaching literature, I want them to read the book and figure it out, at least make an attempt to figure it out on their own, because I think that's what leads to deeper learning, right?
So, no question.
So how does my perspective fit with, are we talking about the same thing or different things?
I think it's about structure. So there's no question that in my mind, you can have someone read a book, but you know, I remember I have a master's in religious studies, and I remember my first course, we had about 1,000 pages of reading a week. And it was just go read these five books kind of deal. And I think there's ways that you can chunk it down more, and definitely, whether it's assigning chapters, activities around it. I mean, I think there's ways to sequence, but I think with any of these rules, you know, they're not like hard, fast rules for all things. I think context, learning outcomes, these dictate what and how you do. Right. I think the idea more is that students get overwhelmed when they, you know, I worked at a university for a number of years where essentially the course in computer science, they just have one PDF that was like 250 pages long. And that was the content. Right. And it overwhelmed everyone. And so the idea is when you could, you know, digestible chunks, I don't just think for learning, but I think also for me, an instructional designer, it's a lot easier to update a chunk or to change little chunks than to, you know. So there was. We're going to come over. We have the online people to think about.
The move toward assessment and thinking about learning goals and objectives in classes and lectures and chunking, at some point you get away from, man, I want my students to learn as much as possible about this, instead of saying, okay, here are the five things that are the most important. And it's almost as though you're teaching to a test. You're forcibly limiting the reaches of better students that could be learning more, could be doing more, but aren't asked to do so because not the whole class is asked to do so. Where have you seen opportunities to stretch students within a framework in an online class that's designed for, here's what my competencies need to be, here's what I want my students to learn at a minimum, as opposed to an unknown upper boundary?
Well, I've taught for a number of years web development courses, and what I find is I have usually a third of students who have, maybe they already been developing websites for years, another third are kind of, you know, some basics, and another third, they have no idea what they're doing. And it's like, how do you sit there and meet all of their needs? And so I've done things like hacker challenges, optional things that that they can earn extra credit or they can push themselves to try to encourage the students who already know, you know, so rather than just skating through the assignment, it's like, all right, let's see some HTML5, some CSS3, or I gave, you know, I was sharing Code Academy links so they can go to different things in Code Academy and earn badges. And so I'm sure some other people have some ideas too, but I think there's no question that, you know, with online learning or learning in general, is how do we encourage, you know, students to explore more and really fall in love with a topic, you know, and I think part of it is letting students create assignments that are meaningful to them that they will kind of, you know, go after. I've heard, you know, I've some colleagues we've gotten discussions before about the problem of rubrics. So we talked about how rubrics are great. Well, sometimes rubrics can just set the bar here and students are just going to make sure they hit every part of the rubric where you want them to go further. You know, I have other, another one of our colleagues, Brian Youngke, he doesn't like to give examples of projects because he wants the creativity to them to push the limits. So, I mean, there's lots of ways, but we have a couple more themes, so I'm going to try to, this will be the last comment.
Skip Ward from Fort Hays State University in Kansas. I teach business communication and training and development. Use technology intentionally. I stole this from somebody. I'm tweeting to my class photos, quotes. Secondly, use guest lectures where appropriate. I grab people, use my iPhone, got some of the enthusiastic poster displayers to give their one-minute elevator speech, and I uploaded that to the course website. And assign meaningful work. I stole this when I was in a program that in training and development, the students, and they're all working adults, are creating a training program for their current job or previous job and doing it in chunks. I really relate to these items.
Great, wonderful.
Well, and keep in mind, these are not our words. These are our colleagues' words. So you're sort of, they're resonating with you because they came from sort of an organic place. The third theme was around presence, which is an important theme to Patrick and I. We've done a lot of work in this area. But again, these are some of our colleagues' words. Know your audience, be accessible, be kind, have a sense of humor, use synchronous technologies. And I think we saw several comments in the list. Does anyone have one that they want to share? I remember about the cats.
No cats.
Wearing a funny hat, using puppets.
Tanya Means, University of Florida. I think you need to be real. You have to have a personality and put a face to names. You can't just have everybody be names. They have to have faces.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no question for us that we have so many different strategies on how we've tried to do that. You know, and working with faculty too, you know, when faculty want to do, you know, record, capture a lecture, this or that, they want to get everything perfect, right? Wear the right shirt, make sure the dog's not in the room. And so we've really tried to kind of encourage people to just, you know, let it go. Let people get to, your students get to know who you are, but also at the same time, give them opportunities to do the same. There's one over here.
One of the things that I do with a lot of our faculty that are designing online is I tell them to write as if they're writing a letter to their students, or if they're talking to a pen pal, or if they're talking in class. A lot of times as they're giving instruction or things, they're trying to be so precise and so scholarly that their personality really would come out more when they are just talking as if they were talking in class.
I think I mentioned this movement to this new LMS. And in every area where students would post, would respond to one of my announcements, respond to a discussion prompt or so on, they have the choice of using text, or they can do an audio recording, or they can do a video recording. And I've been trying to push them that direction because of that. Sometimes I want that reflective, sort of processed, but a lot of times I want sort of the more spontaneous. And it's the more spontaneous that can really help us with this presence piece. And so that's been sort of a very interesting change in my online teaching this semester, is to have those capabilities.
One thing I want to say about knowing your audience. So, Jonia, we've researched presence a lot. We've written a lot about it. One of the things that we found is that there's no magic formula for every student. You know, what one student wants or needs as far as presence goes, the other student necessarily doesn't. And so we wish, and at least in our work, mm-hmm. we found that there isn't just one rule that, like, video is perfect for everyone. I gave the example of the video announcements, but after interviewing students, we found that you got to know your audience, and you also have to realize that most likely whatever things you do to establish presence aren't going to be as meaningful for every student. And so we had two hands. We're going to go with these two, and then we got to go on to our last, I think we have one more.
One more thing. Hi. In knowing your audience is also, I think you need to know yourself and be prepared that just like in a real classroom, unfortunately, not every single student is going to love you. And the humor or the connection activities you do may not hit home with everybody. We teach workshops a lot, and you know, we had a humorous connective thing that we were doing one time, and boy, it really crossed somebody wrong. And that person, I think, was looking for a way to attack us. You know, they were that student who just was not going to hear what we said. Don't know why they were in the class, but anyway, they were. And it was a tough lesson for me to realize that somebody would get that upset about something. And I had to remember that it probably really wasn't that joke or whatever that made them mad. They were just not happy to be there. And
sure. Yeah,
I mean, with that.
I think that what, and I think part of knowing your audience is actually taking time to identify and learn about your students, but also give them feedback loops back where they can give you feedback if something really does rub them wrong. I know I want a student to let me know. All right, last comment here, and then we're going to move on.
Hi, I'm Robin. One of the items I think online you nearly always have to be cognizant is creating your community and what are the norms for your community. And what I find is in online, people hide behind their anonymity, so their username and those kinds of things. And I think it's really important for people to be accountable and stand up for who they are in the classroom. And that accounts for students as well. So the community building aspects and the accountability aspects that you build into your online courses are really important. So establishing a set of this is how we behave in our class and our sense of community and guidelines and what's acceptable is not is one of the first things you have to do before you even jump into things, especially if you want the sense of humor or the spontaneity or the very sincere responses that you want to elicit from your students, your audience.
Definitely.
And that gets back to that student support theme that came up as well. Again, being as explicit as possible and taking the time to actually establish sort of those guidelines and provide those directions to people. The final theme that came up when we analyzed the data was personal impact. And so some lessons learned for people about online teaching, their big takeaways, have had to do with things that change them. And so these are a few examples. Teaching online can be done anytime, anywhere, but it sure stinks to be teaching while on vacation. So I think a lot of us have learned that lesson. And the world is your audience, and so that awareness of being online and what it means in terms of it's really different when you're in a classroom space, and sort of the moment that you say something, it can be gone. But when you say it online, there's more of a permanence in knowing that that continues and that it may be accessible from people beyond your immediate class. And one person was just really excited to have learned to use an iPad, for example. We get a lot of those that, depending on what institution they are and what incentives there have been to move online, people have had opportunities to actually gain technology equipment for their own use and then learn to use those depending on their faculty development structure. And so people are really excited about branching out and doing something different.
So we're about out of time, and we obviously we love the comments, we love the feedback, and so, in the last minute or two, did these basically lessons learned strike a chord? Do any of you have any comments, closing feedback about this? about what we found about, you know, the list or anything.
Or themes that you think we've missed.
Definitely.
Yes, there's a gentleman right here.
This one may be surprising in this group, but there are a lot of schools out there that have not gone online at all. And so I think that one of the themes that you've missed is just diving in. How do you even start in this direction? What are the first priorities? What are the just some of the practical, if someone is even thinking about it, what do they need to be thinking about first? Because, I mean, this list is great. And believe me, I'll use it. But what if you look at that and you're thinking, okay, how do I do all this?
And I think that's a really good point, because these are coming from people, and they're saying, here's my lesson learned, past tense.
After years of teaching online.
And so it is not thinking about, we could ask a different question, which is, what is the one thing you would tell a new online instructor that will help them be successful in that endeavor? And so that could be a different question where we'd collect information. What is the one thing you'd want to say to that person, or the two? And that would be a very different kind of a list. You're absolutely right.
Definitely.
It'd be fun to do that, actually. Let's do that.
Right.
That'd be fun.
And some of the things I think would, you know, making digest, chunking content, I mean, some of that might be the same thing you might tell someone, but I think it's, yeah, it's right on. When I've worked with, and Joni, when we work with people who are brand new teaching online, you don't throw that whole kitchen sink at them. You just start really slow. And we there's two. We'll start with you.
Okay. Bill Culverhouse, Erlen College in Richmond, Indiana, small liberal arts college. We've got a lot of our teaching faculty who fall exactly into that category. They've never done this before. And so, I mean, just to piggyback off of that, it would be great to be pointed towards any resources that already exist that essentially constitute a designing an online course for dummies. Not the dummies being the students, but the dummies being the designer of the course who has never done it before. We've got a lot of faculty who are approaching this new world with a fair degree of fear. And it would be really helpful to have some resources that break it down, simplify it enough that it feels manageable to them. And they feel like, oh, I can do this. And then the other thing, just really quick, is I think one of the things that the gentleman right behind me brought up earlier about the difference between digestible and pre-digested is something that I know my colleagues at Earlham are particularly concerned about, and they have, I think, a false impression of online courses as consisting of pre-digested rather than digestible. And so it would be great to make that distinction.
Great.
Well, and please, if there's a moment after, if anyone's in that position, Patrick and I have lots of resources that we'd be happy to share. We'd be happy to give our business cards to folks who are looking for resources for faculty who are just starting out. So connect with us afterwards. This is something that we do a lot of work around.
I am interested in kind of following up this with that, you know, and it's the idea of, like, what are the 10 things you do to start a, you know, online course? And we've... You know, at CU Online, when I worked there, we had something like, you know, David Thomas did something like, how do you design a course in 24 hours or something? So we have a number of different things. So last comment in the back before we wrap up.
Susan Zavacek, Fort Hays State. I think this is really good. I think it would be a helpful next step to, however, split this. Many of these things are not teaching behaviors, but course design elements. Many people are handed a pre-developed course and expected to teach it, and you are not allowed to change many of the elements in it. It would be great to have course design tips and teaching tips, which are two different things.
Definitely, and this is just how the themes came up. I think some of these are teaching tips about presence and other things. I worked at a university, at Regis University, same type of there. The course was, I had no authoring capability, so what you did was in the discussions. That's the way that you adapted. And so I think that there are some things in here that are facilitating, but I think your point's right on. Yeah. And we're interested to get the master list that you guys just did, and we're going to do a webinar on this next month, and then we're going to finish the paper that takes all of this. So, well, we appreciate the interactivity, you guys jumping in and giving us feedback. You never know how this will go. You guys were a great group, and we'll be up here if you have any questions.
Yes, thank you, everyone.